Good evening, listeners. It's Wednesday somewhere, and that means that you're listening to Spoiler Alert, a weekly talk radio show for movie and television lovers. On today's show, we are diving into the work of the Flatlands, where X goes one way and Y goes another, and there's no need to mention Z. That's right, we're taking a look at some of the works that have been made in our very own province. Now, it's not every day that we get to talk about filmmaking in Saskatchewan, so I have filled the roster with experts. In chair one, we have Sanj Stange. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Sick.
In another chair, Sean Dunham. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you so much for having me.
And welcoming longtime listener, first-time caller, filmmaker Mike Rollo. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Thank you all for coming on the show. It's all very exciting that we could all be here digitally together.
I think it's really nice having all the exact same level of expert in filmmaking.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I think is the best.
I don't think anyone is any more experienced in any way at all. So that's not a thing we have to worry about. A thing we do have to collectively worry about is the snow, which I will go on record and say that I am over. At this point in time.
Jeremy, not this weather talk.
It's very Saskatchewan behavior. He's just setting the tone.
It's true. That's actually true. Yeah. I should look outside. Is it snowing again or more?
It's going to be an ocean on Saturday.
Yeah.
Oh, is it really?
It's going to be like plus one, so get out those galoshes.
No need to shovel anybody. Let's just let it melt. Mike, I think that everyone's relatively familiar with us three goofs on the show, but could you tell us a bit about yourself to sort of cement yourself in spoiler alert history?
In the annals.
Well, first I'd like to thank you for inviting me on. This is a great pleasure to talk a little bit about Saskatchewan films and some of the films that I'll be presenting in Germany. My name's Mike Rollo, and I'm a filmmaker here in Saskatchewan. I'm also a teacher at the University of Regina. And I primarily do short documentary experimental films, but I'm a film lover. I love everything, as my wife mentions to me all the time. It's just that I will watch anything. So, I'm happy to be on here and chat with you folks about films.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. I feel like it's kind of been a long time coming, and I don't know what kept us, but we're happy for the...
And also, iconically, Mike's wife forged this team from...
She did.
From iron and stone or whatever.
Yeah, I feel like we might talk about how... interconnected the film world in Saskatchewan is, and this is just one example, which is fun.
Yes, one of many. It is sort of an endless weave. Plus there's I don't know, there's 40 people in the province, and that becomes evident more and more every single day. But anyway, so Mike, you kind of answered this, but we might get into something a little bit different. But what's your relationship to Saskatchewan filmmaking? If at all.
I actively make films in Saskatchewan. I first got interested in making films when I was in high school. My parents had like a home movie, camera, both like Super 8 and kind of an old analog video camera, 8mm tapes. And I was kind of, interested in maybe pursuing that. I wasn't really too serious about it, but then I took like a Film 100 course at the University of Regina, and I was like sold. I was like, this is what I want to do, and I came in like thinking big dreams, like, yeah, I'm gonna make it to Hollywood and this is like what I'm gonna do. And then you make that first film and your dreams are dashed, and just cry because you don't know what you're doing, even though you've taken a few production courses. But then I met like a really amazing teacher there, Richard Kern. Well, maybe I'll talk a little bit more about Richard later on, but like he introduced me to a world of experimental and documentary films I didn't even think were possible to make. And after that, I moved on to taking more film courses and graduate studies in Montreal, and taught there for a while, and then returned here when there was an opening at the University of Regina. So, but even when I was in Montreal, I was shooting all my films in Saskatchewan. Like all my films were in Saskatchewan. Just the quality of light and the stories that were open to me, I didn't see anywhere else that I could possibly shoot. So there's just so much opportunity and so much, you know, I guess openness, to say, to use kind of like a metaphor in terms of like what the possibilities are in terms of shooting films here in this province.
Cool. Thanks, Mike. Yeah. Sean, what about you?
Well, I also took Film 100, you know, in 2000 and something. And I never really considered myself a filmmaker. I just was really interested in film and obsessed with memorizing things about film. But then also I just realized that this weekend I had to, an art collective called Hibernation Station played two films, but they're just literally like Instagram reels that I made, but they sent it, we sent it to them, and it's like a music video and like a fake interview or whatever. So I guess technically I'd be making some films in Saskatchewan.
You're in there, and you're also in films, Sean.
And I am in the films.
Yeah.
The budget is, couldn't be more shoestring, but sometimes it's happening anyway.
Sometimes that's what you need. Sometimes that's what you need. Sanj?
Well, and I'd say, Sean, certainly not a reflection of the quality. I probably am like the least involved in the actual making of films of the four of us. But like Sean, once I sort of thought about it, there is more of that than I first thought. So, you know, have lots of friends who make films here in the province. You know, have been a fan and a watcher of many films, especially, you know, like independent local films over the years. But I remembered that actually when I was, I think, 12, maybe, I participated in, I think it was the Film Pools. It was like a little spring camp, like a documentary filmmaking camp.
For children?
And I also, for the youths. I believe our film was about like girls and body image, very, very mid-2000s stuff.
Wait, you made that when you were 12? Oh my God.
Listen, Sean, I wanted to get the word out.
I know. You're just a smart dang person.
Thanks. And I also was once a background actor on the, you know, legendary Saskatchewan production, Disasters of the Century. In like 2003, I did a reenactment of a family affected by a cyclone, and was also an extra on Corner Gas once. So,
can you give
know.
Us a taste of the cyclone, lady?
You got the most credits here, Song.
I named the most credits. I don't think that means I have the most.
You might.
I was a child in period garb from the 60s playing board games, to answer your question, Sean, and then running down to a basement.
And then you look out a window and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
We're going to have to source that clip.
I would love to see
it. I actually found it today, so I will send it to you.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Amazing. Well, much like Mike, I don't know how I got into it. There was sort of like this booming industry around me, and my brother went to learn to make movies, and I was like, that seems cool. So I kind of also went to learn to make movies. I did find myself being much more interested in like the weird stuff that I was making for my friends. So I sort of took that path for a few reasons we'll discuss in the next question here. I do think that there is maybe something to the... I think it's the light is here, Mike, and I think you're right. I do think there is something to the flatness of it. And I don't know... if you guys have done the thing where you go somewhere else and it is kind of like a claustrophobic thing, and I don't know if that's it or not, or if I'm just sort of thinking, but I also kind of pursued the filmic arts, and that has taken me down a path I never thought I would go down, which has me teaching people interactive design, and frankly I don't know how it happened, to be honest with you.
Saskatchewan is great because it really gives the illusion of any place that you could possibly film. You're like, oh, you're in the desert? Oh, you're in the forest? oh, you're in a big city? We can put you against this city block.
Yeah.
Well, you could even like make it look like you're at the ocean too. Like if you just go to like the Quill Lakes, it's just like endless.
Mm.
Like yeah. So like you can really rework the geography to your story. So yeah, it's an interesting province to shoot in.
Yeah. Well, and people are usually pretty cool with most things, unless you're at the Cornwall. Like that's the one huge exception that I found.
Are you trying to film with the Cornwall?
Did the security guards kick you out of the Cornwall?
Multiple times. Oh. Yeah, just absolutely. Yeah. And the sort of big time in question was we were just at the top level of the parkade. No one was up there, and we kind of put some effort into it. Anyway, I didn't necessarily ask, but I also didn't necessarily like not ask. But you
did a weird middle ground. I don't know.
I did. And then they were like, oh, totally. And then we were there for a long time. And then they were like, absolutely not. But I did get lucky, and we found a very similar location on a hotel across from the casino.
The Delta. The top,
and they were much more cool with the whole situation. And they were like, no one ever goes up there. Yeah.
Well, they should, because it's really high and kind of scary.
Yeah, probably not safe. Mm-hmm.
But anyway. My next question is, what is the abridged history of filmmaking on the prairies? And I do think that there's two stories here, because Mike, you're never an industry man, were you?
No. I put my foot in and I didn't like it.
Oh, do you remember what that production was?
Jeremy.
What was it? What was it called? It was the one with with Jennifer Jason Leigh. It was in 2000. John C. Reilly was on that one.
Oh my god, I have no idea.
I could try to find it. We can
look at the break too.
Yeah,
true.
But like, I think it was on set for like a day or two, and I'm like, this is not for me. However, I did have like really great experience working on smaller productions with SCN. Yeah, but and I miss SCN. Like that was the first channel that was able to like show my work, like a lot of student work and a lot of work from the Saskatchewan Film Pool. To answer your question there, like I was never really interested in the industry. I thought like, you know, maybe that's what I should do. And then once I, you know, was on it for like a couple of days, like, no, it's not fun.
Well, and that was sort of very much my and my friend's plan, in school. And that was why I pivoted to grad school, because I kind of panicked and I didn't really know what to do.
Right.
So I just like extended my stay as long as possible to kind of figure that out, which is good, because it kind of led me down a different yet adjacent path. It kind of had a weird effect.
It's long days and long stretches between.
But it led us to kind of I think that the loss of the tax credit and people sort of leaving the industry here because there wasn't one and sort of taking on other jobs or just going to a different center did kind of like open the way maybe a bit more for the kind of films that you selected, Mike, just because there was sort of space for them maybe, right?
Yeah, you know, it's also like the films I selected for this presentation in Germany is kind of also a unique way of thinking about working with the materials that the filmmakers are using to shoot the content. And I think there's like an interesting symbiotic relationship between like the formats and the materials and the content that they are exploring. But I can get into that later on. But
I think you should just get into it now, Mike. I think we're there.
Oh well. I wanted also to mention that the movie I remembered that I worked on was called Skipped Parts.
Oh.
So not even credited on that because I left. Like it was like hauling stuff out of a van, and I felt like, you know, this is kind of like similar to when, you know, I was working at a grocery store. Like, you know, it's like the same thing. So there wasn't really anything creative about it. But like, you know, working on these like small shows for SCN, like, you know, it was just like small crews. So you had a handle on like working with a little bit with the camera and sound and Yeah, it was a lovely experience, but yeah, sorry, Jeremy, I went off on a tangent there.
You're... No, that's fine. I also realized I probably should say that most people might not know what SCN is, but they probably would know what City TV was,
yeah.
Maybe.
The Saskatchewan Communications Network, yeah.
Yes, and so it was just an opportunity for, well, honestly, it's kind of like community radio in a way, where local people could have access to get their stuff on. What channel was it on, Mike? Do you know?
Oh, back in that day, was it Channel 12?
I was just, yeah. My brain just gave, was like, is it 12? And I was like, yeah. How did you know that, brain?
I think it's, well, it's, I think 12. It was 12. Yeah.
I think so.
But, well, we miss you.
I wasn't familiar with SCN because I grew up outside of town. I just had like two channels. But Swamp Fest makes funny videos that are broadcast on Swampy Communications Network, SCN, but I never really got the joke because I didn't know what the reference was.
That's really
but
funny.
Everyone else seemed to think it was funny, so I'm like, okay.
There we go. Seems that SCN never died then, Sean.
Mm. It's still with us.
Can't Swampy privatize the swamp.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is true. But Mike,
yeah.
You are on the show because you are doing a particular thing, which sounds really cool. I am not even going to try and pronounce it at all. I was just going to fully leave that up to you.
Well, you're the wrong person for sure.
That's for sure. That's not my thing. Like, it's just not my thing. But Mike, could you talk a little bit about I've used the word screening. I don't know if that's the right word or not, but can you talk a bit about your curation, Mike?
And is it true that all eight of them were filmed at Cornwall? I heard that.
let me see, about 60%.
Okay.
So strange.
Wild.
Yeah, so
maybe it's personal.
I guess a little bit of backstory. I programmed with this festival. So it's the Dresdner Schmal Filmtag, which means it's the small gauge film festival in Dresden, Germany. So essentially this festival is like a forum for curators and filmmakers who specifically engage with like small format cinema. So that's anything like Super 8 and 16 millimeter. And that could be open to like, you know, feature films that were shot on 16 to like interesting experimental or expanded cinema presentations of film. So it's really great, and it's a very like welcoming community, and the space is designed where like most of the films are projected in this old kind of like factory that used to produce tanks for the war. So it's like this like really just like gorgeous building, and then it's offset by like two galleries that are used for, you know, panel discussions and art exhibitions. So I was approached like a couple of years back to present some experimental films from Quebec because they knew I was part of a film collective in Montreal called Double Negative. And so I presented some work from Quebec, and then I had a chat with the organizers there, and I said, hey, you know, there's a lot of great quality work from Saskatchewan that really doesn't always get enough attention. And so I pitched this idea about showcasing some interesting work from filmmakers who still work on 16 and Super 8. And that's kind of where it began. And so I had kind of back and forth discussions with them and organized a package of films from eight filmmakers that have very different styles and approaches to their work. So it's kind of like an interesting survey of like how these filmmakers use 16 or Super 8 for their films, how they think about like the texture and the style of the formats for their own vision. And and it ranges from like really interesting fantasy films to like experimental expanded projections to you know, a nice homage to German Expressionism that kind of finishes off the film, which is kind of finishes off the program, which is kind of nice considering that we're showing in Germany. So
nice. Yeah, we were all lucky enough to see most of what you selected. through some links, and then we saw a few like more trailer
some teasers or
sort of portions of things.
Teasers.
Yeah. It's kind of cool that you were able to like exercise that particular muscle in terms of selecting a Saskatchewan film, and like, you know, the Venn diagram of people shooting here on old formats must not be huge, like we kind of alluded to, in terms of like the community is small, and so you kind of know, well, I certainly recognize a lot of names looking at the list. Mm-hmm. I think all of the names, including friend of the show Matt Riplinger, who was actually, Mike, our first guest. Was that like,
it was like our month of the third show? It was very early.
yeah So it's kind of cool to have him now be featured on something.
Oh, that's great.
It's really fun. Do you think that Prairie people have a love for film, or do you know why it's kind of kept going here in, I guess, kind of a big way, at least a prominent-ish way?
So when you mean film, is it just like storytelling with motion picture, or is it
shooting on film? I mean cellulose, man.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, like, you know, when I was thinking about the survey and trying to put together a curated program, it was actually kind of challenging. Mm-hmm. There are quite a few filmmakers that are, I say, engaged in shooting with like Super 8 or 16, but that's mostly due to a lot of like, you know, events that surround it, mm-hmm. right? Like the One Take Super 8, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, started back in 2000 by a friend of mine, Alex Rogalski. And now that's gone on internationally. And it's a great kind of introduction to working with like film, especially for like amateur filmmakers or those who are just kind of like want to dip their toes in and thinking about like how to tell a story with motion picture. But like for those who are like serious and still kind of working on film, it's there's not a lot in the province. I could like, you know, look east towards Winnipeg, and there's a more mm-hmm. active community there. In Saskatchewan, it can be challenging. So, you know, I really only have one filmmaker from Saskatoon represented, and I was kind of hoping I had a few others on the list, but just to kind of mm-hmm. condense it into a solid 55-minute program, because the organizer's like, you can only be like 55, and because we got to do this and that, right? So I'm like, okay. So a few of course were not included in this, but I really wanted to showcase a range of work, a range of diversity in terms of how they tell stories and how they experiment with the format.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different practices and approaches and methodologies in all these films. And then, you know, kind of thinking thematically, like, oh, I wanted a few that showcase ideas around landscape and a few that, you know, really concentrate in exploring portraiture. So, like, you know, and portraiture in different ways, right? Like Gerald Saul's, like, very emotionally heartbreaking and lovely tribute to his dad, mm-hmm. which was actually part of the One Take Super 8. Mm-hmm. But that was, like, a film that, for me, like, you know, I was kind of tearing up. You know, it's really intimate. It's like shot like very close to the body, and really good voiceover in trying to communicate with his father. But then, you know, we have another portrait piece with Sir Bailey with Matthew Riplinger, you know, mm-hmm. which is mm-hmm. like a portrait of his the last days of his dog before he died. So, you know, different ways of thinking about how these filmmakers tell their stories through the light of the lens.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think we should also note that Map kind of took experimental even further than experimental with the kind of making his own emulsion, which I kind of should think I should find out how that works. Because some of the visuals in this are pretty wild.
Yeah, I mean, when I think of, like, you know, the days when Matt was a student, and so it was just kind of an amazing experience for me to see, you know, someone so dedicated in their craft as a fourth year student, like basically sleeping in the dark room, you know, making his own emulsion. And in that process, like, it was trial and error, you know, like working from a few different recipes, then shooting it, finding out it didn't work, going back to it. Like, you know, the amount of labor and dedication that he put in that film was really quite amazing. And then once it's all shot, he has to re-photograph it frame by frame by frame to get the kind of motion and rhythm set in that work. So it's really quite something to witness, just like as an instructor and just like seeing that process move through, and then finally seeing the final results and just like, wow, this person just really understood everything and just took detailed notes and is a craftsman.
And I really
liked the
sound design
detail
in that film too.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's all Matt. So really quite awesome. Quite interesting. And yeah, I mean, like, again, I was also thinking about connections too with like Germany, and that's why, like, you know, Der Glockner is like kind of the good film to like close on, right? And that was part of like a couple of years ago, there was kind of a German Expressionism Festival, you know, that I believe Gerald Saul and Kristina Stoyanova and Christine Ells, they were all kind of part of that. And so a few films were created, there was a panel discussions involved and screenings at the RPL. So it was really kind of interesting event that took place. But Christine shot this film, I believe, in 2015. Nice star in it. Which is,
I was going to say, I did recognize fun experience. A person in it.
Yeah,
we noticed
the groom.
I'm the groom. I don't know how were my acting chops, Sean.
Well, we only got like the teaser of that, but as you really sold me,
I think that's all
like,
I'm in it.
This man is married. This man is happily married.
He sure. Conveyed that for sure.
All right, great.
Married for sure.
Yeah,
but yeah. Well, Mike, we're gonna have to put a pause on this conversation for the moment. We're talking about Saskatchewan film and Mike's project involving selecting some Saskatchewan films. But you are listening to Spoiler Alert on 91.3 FM CJTR, Regina Community Radio, tuned into the community. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Spoiler Alert. We're talking about Saskatchewan-made films with Mike, our special guest, Mike Rollo, today. We're going to keep talking about Saskatchewan-made films, but first, does anyone know what time it is? Does anyone have any awareness of the time?
Very unclear.
Winter time.
It's game time, people.
Whoa.
For those who don't know, or if you're just tuning in, kind of like Mike, the game is where I find a movie related to our topic, and then I tell these three what the title is, they tell me what they think it's about, and then I tell them what it's really about. Guys, are you ready to play the game?
Yep.
We're ready.
I am.
Here we go. So much enthusiasm. This week's game is Summer of the Monkeys. That week's title. That title again. Summer of the Monkeys.
Mike, would you like to go first, or do you want someone else to start? So you have
go last.
I think someone else has to go before me.
Okay, I always make Sean go first. Sean, you want to go?
That's true, yeah.
Okay, I can go first.
I was blown away you even asked.
Well, we have a guest, Jeremy. Some of
we're
us
trying
are
to be polite.
Our feelings of our guests.
It's our show. He's unless he's going to run away. No, I'm kidding.
So I believe this is a Saskatchewan filmed film.
Yep.
And I believe it is about a group of friends during a very iconic summer, and they are referred to as the Monkees. Just a little gang of hardscrabble toughs, teens perhaps, the summer before they all split off to go do different things. Go to university, get that weird job, starting military training, I don't know. and so then, yeah, this is the 2 months before the gang dissolves and they go through. It's very a very now and then coming of age things happen. But wow. with the beautiful background of Saskatchewan,
that's wow, what okay. I think. Thank you, Sean. That sounds great. Yeah, interesting. Okay. I thought you were going to bring it back to the band for a minute.
No! But in this world, the band does not exist.
Oh, fair enough. Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
It's like that movie where the Beatles don't exist. The Beatles?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of a monkey song to name that movie, but that's okay.
Hey, it's song... the monkeys.
Hey, hey, it's not the monkeys. Themselves.
Hey, not the monkeys.
Not the monkeys. Sanj, what do you think Summer of the Monkeys is about?
Okay, like Sean, for some mysterious reason, I do think this is a Saskatchewan film. And I think it's set in maybe like the 50s. And it's that classic thing of like a circus is traveling through town. And as they're going through some small Saskatchewan community, which also is like a lot less scalable of a business, I think, in Canada than it was in like the States. Like there's a lot less stuff for the circus to hit. But anyway, mm-hmm. as they're going through some small community, the monkeys escape. And so it's all about one summer in the 50s when some monkeys, not the monkeys, had run of a small Saskatchewan community. It really brings the town together, makes them confront some things that need confronting. And I'm going to say there's like a precocious child who kind of is leading the charge on like, we need to make friends with the monkeys and not just... you know, have an effort to, mm-hmm. to chase them out of town, and then the whole town learns because of that child's wisdom.
Might this be a Planet of the Apes prequel?
Might be.
Well, I think those are all great suggestions as to what this film might be, knowing like Saskatchewan's history with like kind of more child-oriented films, kind of like in the vein of like Archie and
true.
You know, Vampire Dog, which my daughter loves.
Oh.
Yeah, and because we live, like, pretty close to Balfour, when, like, I think it was, like, maybe the first or second, like, shot, like, the establishing shot showed Balfour. She's like, oh, I didn't know this was shot in Regina.
Vampire Dog's house.
It's super cute. But, yeah, I kind of think it's probably more of like a children's film and, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, like something like, you know, a monkey gets loose, befriends a kid who's having problems in a small town. And then we're introduced to a subset of like other characters where like relationships are not working, but it's like the kid and the monkey get them all together. Mm-hmm. I would hope that it's like a movie where in a small town there's biological experiments done on monkeys, and the monkeys then are set loose and run amok and destroy the town. There's not enough like horror movies in Saskatchewan.
Mm.
You know? True, like it's very ripe for that.
It totally is, but it's like mostly like a lot of the films that like there's a lot of great like feature films that were created here, but you know, I just think like there could have been some more possibilities for like more thriller horror films. So I'm in my mind, I'm thinking The Summer of Monkeys is more of a horror movie.
Mm. Okay,
but it's probably
sounds
not
really
at all
scary now that you say it like that.
Well, thank you all very much. I think all of those might be better ideas than what Summer of the Monkeys is about. So just a quick critique from a man who has not seen it, but has read the whole Wikipedia thing and watched the trailer. Surprisingly little amount of monkeys in the Summer of Monkeys, which
but it's a whole
it's
summer
like
full
they're
film.
There. But it's just, yeah.
Is it a Summer of a Monkey?
No, there's more than one monkey. There's like four monkeys.
Okay.
There is a thing happening where like Sanj is on this like streak of getting points, and points are very rarely awarded. You're not getting any today, so calm down. But you were close, dude. You were close. And Mike, I think elements of what you had grabbed as well were also pretty close.
Really?
And what about me, Jeremy?
I was so happy you're here to play.
Okay. You just got a participation ribbon. Sorry,
Sean. It's so good. It's so good. But The Summer of Monkeys is a 1998 American-Canadian family adventure drama film. It was a direct-to-video from Disney. Mm. Anyway, it was filmed in Saskatchewan, but the story takes place in Oklahoma. Mm. And it is kind of like a very cheap-looking Oklahoma based on some of the images that I've seen. But the quick kind of rundown is that this boy wants to buy a horse that his father has to sell for the farm to operate for $75. And then an incident happens where four monkeys are, I think they get off a train, and to return the monkeys is $85. So it's about him and his sister trying to figure out how to get these monkeys so they can get this money so he can keep his horse.
Such a convoluted and sad plot.
Robbing Piper to PayPal. Yeah, storyline.
You guys, this, like, on Wikipedia, it's 101 minutes, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 paragraphs outlining what happens in this movie. Again, there's like a couple of scenes with the monkeys. I think it like shows me that monkeys are expensive. Like, I think that's what this is telling me. If you're interested, and if Disney Plus is rife enough, you can check out The Summer of Monkeys if you want to.
My only connection with like Summer of Monkeys is I think I remember like in my first couple of years of film school, a friend of ours or like group that we're hanging out with said he got back like shooting from like on a film this summer. His name was David Trottier, and I think he was like being mentored maybe by Jeff Yates. I think Jeff's involved in that film. Jeff Yates like has worked like lighting and grip. He mentioned that it was like The Summer of Monkeys, and so I thought that was like a weird film, you know, to be shot in Saskatchewan. But then, like, it left my mind. Like, I was like, okay, great. Yeah, that's awesome. you got some experience on set, dude. That's great.
I feel like it'd also be funny if it was like, oh, that's a weird joke. And then now, like, 23 years later, you find out that he wasn't kidding.
Well, it's so strange. Like, after you, had that in your email, and I was like, that sounds familiar, and then I'm just like, games, Summer of Monkeys, it all came back to me back like 1997-98, so
yeah, no, that's exactly when. Mike, Sean, Sanj, thank you all for playing the game. The game is of course brought to you by the CJTR membership drive, which is on now until Saturday, March 9th. Be a friend of community radio by buying a new membership or renewing your current membership today. As a member of CJTR, you'll receive benefits like programmer bidding rights, the ability to join our board, exclusive giveaways, and more. Memberships start at only $30 a year with special 2, 3, and 5-year discounted rates. During the 2024 drive, members will receive special discounts at a variety of events running all month long. Go to cjtr.ca to learn more about these cool different events happening throughout the membership drive and go online to purchase your membership online today. You can also call CJTR at 306-525-7274 to learn more. The thing we've been saying is that if you sign up, you can have your own show. Mm-hmm. And I think you should. Yeah. Mike, you could have a show about monkeys.
Mm. That's my dream.
No,
there we go.
That's a natural fit.
It'll just happen in the summer. So I'll just claim the title. Just be the Summer of Monkeys with Mike Rollo. On CJTR.
It kind of fits.
Actually, that's a good title.
It sounds
you
really
do
great.
8 quick shows, and then go off the air.
Yeah, that's it.
Limited
sign off.
There we go. And $85 can also be worked in somehow
to buy off a horse.
Well, to buy a horse to give to the monkeys to return to the train to go to their home.
Yeah, or yeah no, it's a
you retained more the of plot that was. Story than I could have ever had.
I actually cut out a subplot with his sister, which is actually pretty important, but I felt like it couldn't fit it into my synopsis. It's true.
It's only 100 minutes.
That's what it is. Anyway, We are talking about Saskatchewan filmmaking and films made in Saskatchewan. And Mike, can you say the super complicated German word of the thing that you are, the screening that you put together?
The title of the program itself is called Scenes from Saskatchewan, and it's being screened at the Dresdner Schmalfilmtage.
Okay, see?
It's written exactly how it sounds as well.
German is so close
to English. I think this is such a funny bit.
So it's just small film gauge. Small
film dash. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That actually, I think that might make it more difficult for
Jeremy's
me.
Jeremy's afraid to jump in.
That's not a thing I do. That's not something I do.
This anti-intellectualism from Jer.
Is that what that is? Okay.
It's got notes of it.
The doctor told me it was dyslexia, so I don't know. Well. Anyway. We've kind of talked about a few of the films that Mike has selected for the screening. We were able to watch some of them before we were able to meet today. Mm. You guys, do you want to talk about any of the films that we watched this week?
I just wanted to mention a quick fact where I was looking online about some early Saskatchewan cinema. Mm-hmm. And a dodgy website said in the Sask film history that... one of the earliest filmmakers is a man named Dick Bird. And I just thought it was...
Bird Films.
Good to mention.
and the company Bird Films is still running.
Yeah.
So Dick Bird's relatives be out here. And he also produced Canada's first musical, Youth Marches On, from 1937. So that's fine.
Oh.
Mm. And going back to Summer of Monkeys, Dick Bird shot for Disney.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. It's all full circle around
here. We salute you, Dick Bird.
The way Sean just wanted to do a dick joke and then Mike made it actually interesting and educational. I love that.
Listen, I brought it up because it was also interesting. And I have no idea what you're talking about, Sonia.
Anyway, yeah.
Well, I would love to talk a little bit about one of the films, Cinephile, by Mark... Mm-hmm. Is it Wehack?
Yep, Mark Wehack.
Which he is just a really beautiful film that he shot in Paris. And is just kind of a... I don't know if you'd call it a collage, really, of music in the background. And then subtitles. And then just... various shots that he took around Paris, and at the beginning he says in the subtitles that he feels that this will be the last thing he'll ever shoot on actual film, the whole thing is kind of about Paris being this city that loves film, as in like motion pictures, and it just has this really I found it so moving and like melancholy, because we go in with that kind of sense of this being this sort of like farewell to shooting on film from him, and then also just the like power of the kind of like allusions to different films that we might love, like quite a few that I like kind of came up, Charade, Before Sunset, Fabuleux Destin, the Emily Poulain, which is like one of my favorite movies of all time, and just the way that even a phrase of music or like a quote from something that you maybe wouldn't even expect yourself to remember can like instantly call up those feelings about the like text itself. I really loved that one. I watched it a couple times because I just felt very like swept away by it. And I love something that's like a text that's in conversation with other texts. I really liked that approach that he took.
This
is quite what I like about certain films where there's kind of a simplicity of thought. A filmmaker who's probably coming to terms knowing that they might no longer, hold this camera again and shoot on 16 again because for whatever reason they find other alternatives in their approach to storytelling. So to me, right there was like kind of a good entry point. It's like, oh, this is an elegy. Mm-hmm. But in the way that it's constructed, there's like three things going on, right? Where, you know, Mark is moving to the spaces where some of these scenes took place in the films. And then you have the kind of the liveliness of the sound, whether it's the dialogue or like the swelling of the music. But then, again, like as you're mentioning, the text, right? It's like this very personal point of view where in some parts it's like, you know, explaining like how motion picture works, especially with the Bolex. But also like talking about like, you know, his inner thoughts, maybe as he's filming these particular areas in Paris. So it's a great tribute to like the birth of cinema while we're experiencing the death of cinema, or a death of approach of a certain type of cinema for this filmmaker. So there's great contrasts that are happening throughout this film that I really appreciate. And they're so sharp and so focused. And I think that's what I like about Mark's work. Like with a lot of his other films, they're incredibly detailed and they're incredibly focused in terms of like the point of view and the vision. So, it's kind of like an interesting place that I situate it in the program, because it's right after Kiath's film, which is, you know, about these cycles of nature, and it kind of ends like kind of on this kind of death note that goes into Mark's film. And then after Mark's film, it's, you know, Gerald's that, you know, again, it's like there's these ongoing themes of loss and detachment and distancing, whether it's from the subject matter or from the medium that they're working in. So, but yes, Mark's film is like really kind of very sharp in terms of that clarity of a filmmaker who's kind of moving on with how they're approaching or working with the medium of their field.
And well, Mike, it's interesting that you bring up loss in that way as well, just because at the sort of top of the order of Amélie's film, Atkins, it's sort of like more like, well, it has allusions to Frankenstein in the description, but it's sort of about a monster and battling that monster and that sort of thing, and it is sort of very surreal. But it gave me like really hard, like Gerald has this thing about like sort of this method of filmmaking that was like these Saskatchewan home movies that were like kind of a thing where you would dress up a little bit and you would do some things and there might be some like huge time gaps in between. But it is kind of this thing of like, I do think that is also kind of gone. And like, I actually kind of got that bit of whimsy from that, from watching her film, because it was just like, you know, it's like kind of not a practiced thing anymore, in that like a lot of my sort of like quote unquote dad videos are these actually really crappy 30-second shots that are fun to reminisce about. But I remember watching other people's and just hating it. But I did kind of feel like, you know, this was a thing that's maybe now not here anymore. The sort of like more, I don't know if home movie is the right thing, but that sort of like ability to make something sort of like at the drop of a hat with like very basic costuming and then you just sort of go. Obviously, that's way more went into this, but I kind of just got that vibe.
Yeah, I think I get that sense too. And what I appreciate from Amélie's film, I saw this, you know, a few years later. I think it was at a festival, and I didn't really know Amélie very well, but I read about the film in an article in Splice magazine, so it was on my radar. And so when I finally got to see it, I was actually really impressed, because I believe this was Amélie's very first film. She's a textile artist and very good at what she does. And then now she includes 16mm films, either as like single channel or expanded, you know, versions, like screening versions in her work. I don't know if any of you have seen her show at the McKenzie about 5 years ago, but there's like, you know, her textile objects plus some interesting motion picture work that was kind of scattered throughout. But you know, it kind of, they blend into the kind of fancifulness and this like these other worlds that she imagines. But it also got me interested in how she uses landscape and becomes kind of an interesting emotional or psychological trigger as well.
Like Red Riding Hood.
So I know, like, she mentions Frankenstein, but I also see a lot of, like, Alice in Wonderland in this, in this film. And it's just kind of a nice... Yeah, like, it's just a nice way of, like, opening up this program. It's just like, let's just enter a dream world and whatever happens, happens. But yeah, as a first time filmmaker, I don't, you know, not trained, you know, like didn't go through film school. This was like an amazing feat. And like, if you look on the credits, there's some really great filmmakers that helped on it, but like she really had a singular vision and it works so well.
Yeah. And that's such a cool model too, to like have that vision and then seek out the expertise, but still kind of be the one doing the work. Like, that's a neat model.
It really is. And because like she was so connected with like the world that paved arts in Saskatoon and would go to a lot of the screenings and got to meet a lot of the filmmakers, both in Saskatchewan and a few from Winnipeg. There's I believe Heidi Phillips and Clint Neufeld are credited as helping out in the film, and they're filmmakers from Winnipeg. So you know, understanding like who can help me out with this, like I have this vision, please assist. And they did a wonderful job. Like, it's just an incredible film to experience. And I think she only has the one print, so I have it here, and I cannot lose it for the life of me. So yeah, she only has that one print of that film, so.
Well, that's a lot of pressure.
And, so it's finished on 16. So it has like, so it's a projectable 16 print, which is nice. Yeah. And
you put that right by your passport, Mike.
right next to the passport. And then there's like some other films where, so like speaking a little bit about expanded cinema viewing experiences, Convolve, Kobe Richardson's film. I just want to highlight the soundtrack for this. So basically it's a Super 8 film. And it's like, so Colby essentially photographed a few of Greg Bright's mazes. Like, Greg Bright is a maze designer, and he had like a little book for kids. So he like photographed the mazes, and the soundtrack comes from a video camera that reads the visuals from the film and translates that into an audio signal.
Cool.
So for those of you who like watched maybe the clip of it, all that kind of like interesting electronic sound is actually the video camera reading the lines, the motion of the lines, the size of the lines, and it creates the kind of the interesting like waveforms, the electronic waveforms that you hear.
Yeah, that's so cool. I was going to ask you about that actually, because as I was watching it, I did have that sense of like, the sound like matches what you're seeing in this really interesting way, or like parallels it or reflects it. And so I was, yeah, really curious about that. And it was also just really cool to see this because Colby is a childhood friend of mine who I haven't seen in a long time. Yeah, but we grew up together. And so it was like, oh, classic Saskatchewan art world, you know?
Yeah, and so now, you know, he's like, you know, traveling with like, you know, musicians, Feist, you know, he's like doing some really interesting like work with like video looping and layering, but like all live, like it's live looping and layering, right? Kind of a Nam June Paik kind of influence. So so I have to travel with like the Super 8 film plus like a video camera and all these like cords for that work. And Aliens film areas, the projector's on, it's flipped on the side. So they have to take the 60 millimeter projector and kind of flip it vertically, I guess, to make it work. So it was shot like horizontally and then it gets flipped to make it vertical. And, you know, some filmmakers really like to have the participation of the projectionist as part of the projection experience. So having like audience members kind of look behind you and look in front of you, like just really getting kind of a better interaction of the viewing experience.
Yeah,
Very cool. Yeah, very cool, Mike. Mike, we are running out of time, so I have to ask you these last couple questions.
Really quick.
Okay. How can people watch these films, Mike? What's the way?
A lot of these films sometimes do get played regionally in Regina, different festivals. A lot of them are active links, so I don't know if you want to like throw out the names somewhere.
Sure.
Yeah, you can watch through either Vimeo or YouTube. But yes, if you have a chance to, see them at a screening either in Regina or Saskatoon, please go out because they're really amazing and thoughtful works of art.
Yeah, we could put the list on like Instagram or something.
Encourage the community to go out and support some independent Saskatchewan filmmaking there.
Nice. No, that's great.
That's true. That's
that yeah, would be and great. In the episode yeah. description, yeah. maybe.
Yeah. And alternatively, you could fly to Germany pretty soon.
Yeah, I got a few more tickets, so whoever wants to help me out on this, yeah, that'd be great.
Call in now. Anyway, you guys, that is all the time we have. I'd like to give a shout-out to the Garys for the use of our theme song, Manitouna. My co-hosts, Sean and Sanj. Our special guest, Mike, it's been a pleasure, and we'll have you on again maybe just after you get back or something.
Thank you.
Everyone at CJTR and to our listeners, Spoiler Alert is broadcast live Wednesdays at 6, rebroadcast Fridays at 3, and is available as a podcast on CJTR's website. We're on Twitter at Spoiler Alert YQR and Instagram at Spoiler Alert CJTR. Coming up next is some great CJTR content. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.